Welcome to Tulsa Beacon Weekend with Jeff Brucolari on AM 970 KCFO.
Good afternoon. Welcome into Tulsa Beacon Weekend. I'm Jeff Brucolari, and we are glad you've joined us here on KCFO AM 970 as we come to you every week at noon. And I do want to remind you, you can get your copy of the Tulsa Beacon newspaper. It is available in print right now. And you can purchase your copy of the paper at the Midtown Hardware Store on 31st Street between Harvard and Yale. You can also pick up the paper at the Minute Stop. That's at 131st and Aspen in Broken Arrow. Or at Wild Birds Unlimited at 61st and Yale in the Kings Point Village Shopping Center. And you can, of course, call and subscribe over the phone. Get the newspaper mailed to your home or office, 918-523-4425. 918-523-4425. And you can subscribe to the newspaper that way. Excuse me. Well, I hope you enjoyed our conversation with Mark Steele last week. What an interesting man and such a great colleague, such a great creative mind, and all the work that he's done between Tulsa and Hollywood is just amazing. Today on the program, in the second half hour, we are going to talk with Michael Bates. I've known of Michael Bates for years, never met him, I don't think. I've never interviewed him on any of my radio programs in the past, but he will be on the program in the next half hour. Michael Bates from Batesline. We'll talk about some local political stuff with him. This half hour, we are talking with one of the co-authors of a new book entitled Miracle in Shreveport, a memoir of baseball fatherhood and the stadium that launched a dream. And David and Jason Benham are the two brothers that wrote this book. David is our guest. Good morning, David.
Good morning. It's so nice to be with you. Thank you for having me on.
Yeah, well, thanks. I this book has already intrigued me. I got to be honest with you, I'm only about three chapters in, but I don't want to stop reading it because it's so near and dear to my heart because I'm such a big baseball fan. I've, you know, grew up playing baseball and worked in baseball. I still work in minor league baseball. And there are so many similarities in this book that you write about between you and your brother and your father that I have as well. And then there's some things that certainly are not the same. But one thing I do need to mention right off the top here is in the beginning of the book, in chapter one, you talk about how your dad interrupted a wiffle ball game to take you guys to see a movie one day. And that movie happened to be The Natural. And that movie starred Robert Redford and Robert Duvall and Glenn Close and Kim Basinger and all of that. And that was filmed in Buffalo, New York in the summer of 82, and it came out in 1983. And I happened to be an extra in that movie, which was, to me, a huge deal back then. So tell me about your connection to that movie.
I'll tell you, The Natural was the first movie we ever watched, my twin brother and I, with our dad, where a dream was birthed in all three of our hearts. We were like, when he hit that home run in the last part of the movie and you hear that music, the amazing music from The Natural, and he's rounding the bases and the lights are flashing out in this grandstand. That was the dream. My brother and I wanted to play pro baseball, and our dad said, boys, this, we are walking out of the theater. And he said, boys, you guys have a gift. Now, if we put the work in, I think you guys can play pro baseball. That was when we were 10 years old. And that's pretty cool that you were in the movie. You sent me an email with pictures of you as an extra in the movie, and I thought to myself, if I could be anyone at that point, I would love to be an extra in the movie The Natural. That's really cool. So that birthed a dream in our hearts, and what we did from 10 to 18 years of age is my brother and I and my dad, we began to really work. Like, our dad would play catch with us. He would hit us ground balls. We would hit balls off the tee. And it was every single day. We grew up in Dallas, Texas, so the weather was good enough at least 10 months out of the year to where we could pretty much year-round practice and play baseball. And by the time we got into high school, my brother and I began to get recruited. And then finally, out of high school, after our senior year, we signed baseball scholarships to play at Liberty University, which was really exciting because it gave my brother and I an opportunity to play Division I college baseball, where we knew there was going to be lots of scouts to watch us play. And at the same time, it was a Christian education.
Right.
So that's what we really wanted to do. And one of the things that The Natural didn't birth in us, but our dad as a pastor birthed into us, was to utilize the platform of baseball, our talents and our abilities, to glorify the Lord on the baseball field.
Right.
So when we were kids, our dad would always say, look, you're playing this game for the glory of God, not for yourself, not for your own glory. And it's pretty cool, even in the movie of The Natural, Robert Redford, when he was asked, so what do you want? What do you want? He said, I want to be the greatest of all time. When mm-hmm. everybody looks at me and says, that's Roy Hobbs, the greatest there ever lived. And our dad would say, boys, that's not enough. To say David and Jason Benham, they're great baseball players or the greatest that ever lived, which is not true, but still, that's not enough. You want people to glorify the Lord. You want people to see the Lord through you, through your talents and your abilities. And whether you're playing baseball or pushing a broom or pastoring a church or as a plumber or an architect or an engineer or a teacher, whatever it is, you want to do it for the glory of the Lord. So it's kind of a dual dream. It was a mission field. At the same time, it was a dream to play professional sports. So I know I'm rambling here, but then we went to Liberty, and while we were at Liberty, Jason and I, by God's amazing grace, played very well there. And after our senior year, I was drafted by the Red Sox, and Jason was drafted by the Baltimore Orioles.
Mm-hmm.
But that was a very exciting time in our life, and I'll never forget the day we were drafted, both of us. Mom and Dad were at a hotel in Orlando, Florida. We were there with them. My dad was doing a ministry event, and this was before, it wasn't before the internet. The internet was out, but it was not like very active, so everything was based on phone calls to the hotel. We didn't have cell phones,
mm-hmm.
and our mom picked up the call from the Red Sox, and then shortly thereafter, she picked up the call from the Baltimore Orioles, and then we just got to celebrate there. It was a dream come true to be able to do that and experience that together.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. So you really ran through your whole baseball story there pretty quick. But I do want to back up just a little bit here. You know, after Robert Redford, after Robert Redford's character Roy Hobbs says, you know, I'm going to be the greatest baseball player that ever was, that ever lived or whatever. And then I think it was Harriet Byrd is the character. Then she asks him that again. And then she shoots him. And that was played by Barbara Hershey in the movie, by the way. But then she shoots him. Well, then he has to, that delays his career. And then he comes back later as an older player. And finally does break into the major leagues and so forth and becomes the hero of the movie, et cetera, and gets reacquainted with his own son, who apparently he had following a one-night fling with Glenn Close's character in the movie, Iris, and so forth. So that's the movie, folks, basically. And then at the end of the movie, you see Robert Redford playing catch with his son. So it comes like full circle in the movie. And you say your father had a great love of sports. He was a pastor of a church, but he instilled that love of sports with you guys and worked with you, and he was your coach for your Little League team.
Yes, he definitely was, and he always said that his responsibility was not to stand behind a pulpit as a pastor, but it was to engage the community as the salt and light. And so he coached all of our teams. He coached us all the way up until high school. Once we became freshmen in high school, that's when Dad let us play for the high school team. But he was very much involved in sports, and it was just, we would go to baseball games. So we grew up in Dallas, so we would go to Rangers games. But uh-huh. every time the Yankees were in town, our dad wanted to go because he grew up in New York. He was a Yankees fan. So the stories of when we were kids were of Mickey Mantle and Moose Dalrin and then Goose Gossage and all of these other mm-hmm. Reggie Jackson, and Dad would tell us these baseball stories. So it was just a really sweet time of a father just investing in his kids,
right.
And if you're listening to this right now, your kids might be athletes, they might not be athletes, but just find out their bent, find out something that's inside of them that they really resonate with, that kind of energizes them. And then just share it with them and find ways to do it together, find ways to really encourage them in that. And that grew us really close with our dad.
Yeah, that's good. So, like your father, I grew up in New York I'm from Jamestown. Your dad's from where? Syracuse area?
Syracuse.
And so that's how I ended up in The Natural, because it was filmed in Buffalo, and it was only like a 70-mile drive for me to go to Buffalo for the days that I had to be there. And I grew up working with in the Expos organization in their minor league system with the Jamestown Expos. Yeah. And I started as a bat boy and worked my way up, basically. And so, like I said, I've been involved in baseball since I was a kid. And but I got to tell you, this book, folks, you got to get this book. It's not just a baseball book. It's a relationship book. As the subtitle says, a memoir of baseball, fatherhood, and the stadium that launched a dream. There's a great testimony in here from David and his brother Jason, and how all of this worked together, and beyond. And it's just so good. I can't wait to get through the rest of the book. But you talk about the miracle in Shreveport, and in one of the chapters you say, as you guys were going on vacation, and your family vacation every year was basically to go visit family in Georgia. And my kids will tell you they have complained more times than one that our family vacations always included visiting family. You know, it wasn't like we can't just go anywhere and just not see family, can we? And I'm like, no, why should we? We got family living everywhere, you know. Plus, it's a free hotel room. If we can stay with the family, why not? But you would drive along I-10. Is it I-10 or I-20? I-10, right?
I-20.
Okay, I had the wrong eye. Interstate 20, folks, that runs east and west across the country and out of Dallas, and you would drive along I-20, and when you get through Shreveport, you actually see Fair Park Field there off the highway, and you said that was a key landmark for you guys.
Yeah. Yeah, we would always leave Dallas at 4:30 in the morning in our 1979 ice blue Caprice Classic station wagon. We'd lay the seats down in the back. This was before seatbelt laws. And we would just lay down in the back with my brother and I and our sister, older sister Tracy. And about 3 hours after leaving Dallas around 7:30 a.m., we would always be rolling right off of I-20 through Shreveport. And right there off of the interstate was the AA baseball team for the San Francisco Giants, called the Shreveport Captains. It was a minor league team.
Mm-hmm.
And so our dad would wake my brother and I up, and he would say, boys, look at that stadium. And, of course, you know, we'd look out the window as we're driving down the highway, and it looked like Yankee Stadium to us. It was huge. And he would say, one day you boys are going to get to play in that stadium on the same team at the same time. Let's pray. And he put his hand in the back seat while he was driving with his other hand. And we would put our hands in his hands, and we would pray. And Dad would say, Lord, I pray in the name of Jesus, my boys would get to play pro baseball in that stadium on the same team at the same time. Hmm. Well, 2 weeks later, on the way back from Atlanta, it was always at night, and the lights were on. This was always in the month of July. The lights were on, and we would want to stop. We'd say, Dad, let's stop and watch a game. And he'd say, nope, you're not going to get in that stadium until you're playing on the same team.
Wow.
And so, you know, it's crazy because, you know, we did that from the age of 5 to basically 18, and it was just every single year. Every July, we did the same trip to Atlanta, and we'd always pass through Shreveport. Well, after we signed with Liberty University, in order to get to Lynchburg, my brother and I, we would get up in the morning, early in the morning, and we would drive that same route. But then, you know, once we got into Atlanta, we would head up to Charlotte.
Right.
But we would pass by Shreveport Stadium, and Jason and I would pray together. We would do the same thing. Dad wasn't there anymore. Now it was the two of us praying. God, I pray one day you get us on the same team at the same time to play pro baseball together. And now after we were drafted our senior year, the Baltimore Orioles and the Boston Red Sox do not have teams that play, minor league teams that play in the Texas League. So we were up in the New York Penn League. By the way, I played in Jamestown many times. As a matter of fact, when I was in the minor leagues with the Red Sox, Jamestown was the Detroit Tigers.
Right. So you were,
I don't know who they are now.
So when was that? Was that in the early 90s?
Early 90s, yeah.
Yeah, and so I was already out of there by then. I left Jamestown and the Expos after the 1988 season and moved to Tulsa.
Okay.
And so.
Oh, that's awesome.
But you were with. So you were with Elmira then, right?
Yeah. Uh huh.
Okay.
Yep. So anyway, we got out of, but we never, you know, they never had teams that were in the Texas League, which is where Shreveport was. And my brother and I always in the back of our heads, we were like, okay, well, maybe that prayer was just so that we could play pro baseball. But anyway, the long story short, I don't want to tell. I'm not going to give you all the story.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. There's an airplane flying over my head. I'm not going to give you all the story, but I will say this. Miraculously, I get traded to the St. Louis Cardinals after the first year and a half. And then after I'm traded to the St. Louis Cardinals, my brother broke his leg literally in half. When he was with the Orioles, he was in Delmarva, Maryland, and broke his leg and had to be ambulanced off the field. He was covering first base on a wheel play. And they had to surgically put his leg back together. It was crazy. It was really nasty. And they said he'd never play again.
Wow.
And I'll pause there because we figured the dream was over, the story was over, and I was just, you know, going to go and play in the big leagues with St. Louis. And we thought that was it.
Yeah.
But as you read the story, you'll realize it wasn't. That wasn't it. That wasn't the end of the story. God had something up his sleeve.
Yeah. And obviously that ballpark in Shreveport plays a part of that.
Absolutely it does. And so, it was an absolutely miraculous story. So, we told that story the first time we were speaking at an event. We were about to speak at an event, and they told my brother and I, hey, listen, James Dobson is the keynote after you and your brother, but his flight can't get out of Colorado Springs. Can you guys pinch hit for him and give us the keynote address? So we were like, yeah, there were like 4,000 people there. And we told this story, and people came out, and they're like, there's no way that's real. There's no way that's real. And we said, no, every word of it is real.
Hmm.
So when we wrote the book, we hired an editor to go back and look at all the box scores, read all the newspaper clippings and everything to make sure every detail that we said in the story is accurate.
Mm-hmm.
And when people get done with the book, they will be like, that's nothing short of a miracle. God is God.
Right.
He does care about me.
Right.
And he hears prayers even when you're 5 years old and you just pray simple little prayers. God hears them.
Mm-hmm. We're talking with David Benham. He is co-author of the book Miracle in Shreveport, along with his twin brother, Jason Benham. And they are speakers, authors, real estate entrepreneurs. We haven't gotten into that yet, but I do want to talk about that before I let you go. Former minor league baseball players. They are filmmakers. They've been actors. They've been in a few of the faith-based films that you've seen out in the theaters. We might mention those too if we don't run out of time. Let's talk Shreveport real quick. And I hate to make this about me, but I got to tell you, there are so many similarities between you and me. This isn't even funny, and I'm like 10 years older than you. But
I love it.
Get this connection. Your mind's gonna be blown. I broadcast the longest Tulsa Drillers baseball game ever at Fair Park Field in Shreveport, Louisiana. This was 2000 or 2001. The Drillers were playing the Shreveport Captains. The regular play-by-play guy was off doing something for ESPN. They asked me to go to Shreveport to do two games for the Tulsa Drillers. So I did, and I took my wife and kids. And a buddy of mine from Tulsa that did the color commentary with me. And
wow.
We go there, and this is July 3rd and July 4th, right? So the first night we're there, I got the wife and kids, and my son's like 10, and my daughter's 5. So maybe it was around 2001. And what happens is this game just goes on and on and on and on. And of course, I'm there like at least an hour before game time, and so are they. And my poor wife and kids are there the whole time. We went 18 innings. Five and a half hour long ball game. Okay.
Wow.
And that was the Drillers against the Shreveport Captains. The next day, it was like really quick. We were done like in 2.5 hours or 2:45 or something like that. But that first night, and I apologize. I'm like trying to send messages down to my wife in the stands saying, take a cab or just take the car and Barry and I will take a cab back to the hotel or, you know, whatever, you know, and I was just trying to, and they're like, no, this is cool. We're good. You know,
that's great. I was there during those years, 2000, 2001. That's the years we were there.
Oh,
and that's the context of the book is those 2 years.
Oh, well then I might, Well, then I was broadcasting that game. The two night. Were you there? Do you remember that game? Do you remember a game that went 18 innings with the Tulsa Drillers?
I don't remember it. I was with the the Arkansas Travelers.
Oh, you were with Arkansas.
And we came in the last four games of the season in the 2000 year.
Oh.
And played four games at Shreveport. So, I mean, you might have even broadcast the game that we talk about in the book.
That's funny. I'll have to check. But that's hilarious because, so I told you, you know, the connection here is just, it just blows my mind. When you talk about what you talk about in the book, I'm like, well, wait a minute. It's so funny. All right. That's why I had to share that with you. And especially The Natural, I thought, oh my goodness, you'll get a kick out of that. So you and your brother are in the Charlotte area and, my mother-in-law lived in Kannapolis and just moved to Florida in June. And I wish you and I had connected prior to this because I would have like said, hey, when we're in Kannapolis next time, let's go out for dinner or something. Let's meet. But I don't know when I'll be going back to Charlotte. I've got cousins that live there now that still live there, but I don't know that I'll get to Charlotte to go see them. But anyway, you and your brother do a real estate business, right? Are you both involved in the real estate business?
Yes. As soon as we got out of baseball, we located our families to Charlotte, North Carolina, and started a business. We didn't have any business training. Our dad was a pastor, and he just said, boys, if whatever you do it to all of your might according to the glory of the Lord, and infuse biblical principles into your business practices. And that's really what we did. We didn't have training. And so our first office turned into 100 offices across 35 states. And so we found that the same discipline and training and determination that we had on the baseball field, we just put that into business.
Mm-hmm.
And by God's grace, our company grew, and it grew to a point to where in 2012, a production company reached out to us and asked if we wanted a reality show. So we were like, what? I guess so.
They put a commercial together. How did that happen? Were you doing home renovations at the time? How did anybody know about you?
Yeah, we were flipping a bunch of houses. We were managing and renovating anywhere from 6,000 to 8,000 houses nationwide. And this was during like the whole foreclosure crisis. We were going in and picking up, houses that nobody wanted to buy or nobody wanted to sell. And we were getting them cleaned up and selling them. And so they saw us on several videos, and they were like, wait, you guys are identical twins and you've got 9 kids between the two of you? And we're like, yep. They said, this is a reality show. So the first offer we got was from TLC in 2013. And as we were negotiating with TLC, they wanted us to do a show. Actually, we ended up getting an offer from HGTV.
Mm-hmm.
And HGTV wanted us to do a show called Flip It Forward. They had just signed Tip and Joanna Gaines to a show called Fixer Upper.
Mm-hmm.
And so they asked Jason and me, they said, listen, we've got this family out of Waco. We just signed them to a pilot. We want to sign you guys to 6 1-hour episodes straight to series for a show called Flip It Forward. So then in the spring of 2014, we started filming. And that's when a lot of these radical groups out of California told HGTV, you can't give these brothers a show. Mm-hmm. And the reason why they said that is because our dad was a very strong pro-life advocate. He's the guy that baptized Norma McCorvey, who was the Jane Roe of Roe v. Wade. My brother and I launched a pro-life ministry out of our business in Charlotte when our business was going really well. Mm-hmm. And we also made very strong statements to the public when President Obama flipped his position on marriage and said he had, quote, evolved on the issue.
Mm-hmm.
And we were like, we were listening to all of these big businesses, American Airlines and the NBA, Starbucks, everybody supporting it. Now all of a sudden, you know, gay marriage is a thing. And Jason and I were looking, we were like, well, where are the Christian celebrities? Where are the Christian influences? We didn't see anybody.
Mm-hmm.
So we just simply said, President Obama does not define marriage. God does.
Right.
And I don't care what the president says. He does not get to define what God defines. It's mm-hmm. not a political issue. It's a moral issue.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that those statements are what these groups came back and said to HGTV, you cannot give these guys a platform. They're bigots, they're haters, whatever, typical narrative.
Right, right, right.
So HGTV then said, that's just a narrative that's written about the brothers. A lot of us believe like they do. We just don't talk about it. That's literally what these guys all said. And so, anyway, the groups were not happy with that response, and so they started writing new articles and circulating them and then targeting the advertisers. And after the pressure began, this was 10 years ago, 2014, with this episode in 2024, and then we became cancel culture before it became a hashtag. HGTV called us. The general manager was crying, and she said, listen, guys, if the pressure's just too much, we gotta cancel the show.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, you know, we said if our faith costs us a reality show, then so be it, you know.
Right, right.
We had we knew God was behind the throne. We knew God was on the throne. We knew the Lord was going to take care of us. And part of the story was we had that whole miracle in Shreveport story. We watched God miraculously work and answer our prayers. And we knew God loves us. We're his kids. And he's going to take care of everything. And so we're not going to sit there and be cowards in the face of cancel culture.
Mm-hmm.
And so they tried to take, these activist groups actually started mobilizing after we lost our show. They targeted our banks.
Hmm.
They targeted our businesses. They targeted us in every, they wanted to bury us financially.
Wow.
We were right smack in the bullseye of cancel culture before it became a hashtag. And so we, since then, over the last 10 years, we've been traveling the country and speaking in churches and at business events, leadership events, and saying, guys, listen, it's coming.
Mm-hmm.
First, they want to marginalize your faith. The next thing they want to do is they're going to demonize your faith. And then lastly, if they get their way, they're going to criminalize your faith.
Right.
And so we have to stand strong now.
Yeah. Wow. All right. We are just about out of time here. We're talking with David Benham. He and his brother have co-authored this book entitled Miracle in Shreveport, A Memoir of Baseball, Fatherhood, and the Stadium That Launched a Dream. I encourage you to get a copy of this book. I guess they can get it on Amazon, right, David?
Uh-huh. Anywhere books are sold, and Amazon's the easiest. Just click it and go get it.
Yeah. So you can purchase this book on Amazon. It is, it's believe me, folks, it's a great read. It's, what a story. And as he said, when you get to the end of the book, you're going to be like, oh, my goodness, what a miracle. Can't believe it's true, but it's true. And 30 seconds here. Are we going to see this book being made into a movie?
One movie producer has already negotiated the rights to the movie, and I'm not sure what will happen with that, but I sure hope so. It sure would be fun to see that in theaters. It would be a great encouragement to everybody, especially right now in this nation.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I expect a role in the film.
absolutely.
Well,
you got it. From The Natural,
well,
The Miracle in Shreveport.
No, dude, I've been in a lot more movies since then, but but so have you.
That's great.
David's been in, folks, faith-based movies you've probably heard of or may have seen. Courageous, The War Room, Life Changes Everything, Discover Zach Ryan, and also The Reliant. He and his brother were in several of those movies together. And this guy knows his stuff as well. Well, thank you, David. I may have to have you back on the show because there's still a whole lot more that we could probably talk about, especially on the business side.
Oh, man, I'd be happy to be on. Thank you so much for having me. God bless you, bro.
Thanks, David. All right, folks, we're going to take a break. Michael Bates is up next here on Tulsa Beacon Weekend. Stay with us.
There are different kinds of churches for just about everybody's taste. What do you like about your church?
I love the Bible teaching that goes on in our church on Sunday mornings and on Wednesday nights. No matter what day of the week, you can always find a class that's teaching the Bible.
Research shows that people who are connected with others in a good church are just more fulfilled in life.
It helps you grow and learn in the Bible.
I think our church is pretty versatile. They like a wide range of music. I think it would just stir them to see that Christianity is to be relevant and it's creative today.
AM 970 KCFO.
And we're back with you here on Tulsa Beacon Weekend. I'm Jeff Brookaleri. We are glad you've joined us here on KCFO AM 970. We come to you every Saturday at 12 noon. And again, our thanks to David Benham, one of the co-authors of the book Miracle in Shreveport. What a great, interesting story and a miracle. I mean, truly a miracle. I mean, his father, they prayed every time they went by that stadium in Shreveport that someday those two sons would get to play there. together, and they did, and that's just amazing. All right, so let me tell you about the Tulsa Beacon newspaper. It's available in print right now. You can pick it up at the Minute Stop in Broken Arrow. That's the convenience store at 131st and Aspen. Also, you can buy the newspaper at Wild Birds Unlimited at 61st and Yale in the Kings Point Village Shopping Center. And you can get it at the Midtown Hardware Store on 31st Street between Harvard and Yale. Stop by and say hi to DJ. Tell him you heard about him here on Tulsa Beacon radio program or in the newspaper. And he will give you a little discount card. You get 10% off every time you go in there to shop. So you got to do that. And then also you can order the paper, the newspaper, over the phone. Just call this number, 918-523-4425. 918-523-4425. That is the number. All right, we welcome into the studio Michael Bates from Batesline.com. Michael, dear Lord, I've known of you for years and have never interviewed you. This is amazing it's taken this long, but welcome.
Great. It's great to be here, Jeff. Thank you.
Yeah. You know, it's so funny because I've been in the talk radio biz here in town on and off since when did I come back to Tulsa? 1988, November of 88, I went to KRMG, and then I went over to KTRT in 1990. So I've been in this for a long time, and I've known of you and your name and so forth, and heard you on the radio on other stations and so forth, but we've just never met. That's weird.
Finally, our paths cross.
That's just weird, I think, you know, and it's not that big of a city. you know, when people say it's a small world, I'm like, yeah, well, yeah. Just imagine how small Tulsa is. So, you know, recently we had let's talk about the city stuff first, because I think this is interesting. And by the way, for our listeners that don't know, you were on with Charlie Biggs many years ago.
Yep.
He would have you on as a guest. So we are continuing that hopefully now. But the Tulsa city elections were just held. The county elections have been held recently. We had some state legislator spots that were open.
Right.
I want to ask about that first, because my state senator was term limited, Nathan Dom, mm-hmm. Broken Arrow. And there is a particular female who I believe won that position, or there's a runoff. And I'm not sure because it was between, what's her name, Christy
Gillespie and
Dizzy. I like
and,
to call her Dizzy.
Shelley Gortney were the two. So there was Oklahoma has primary runoffs. Mm-hmm. So we have a primary by party. And if no one gets 50% of the vote in that primary, there's a runoff in August between the top two vote getters from right. the June primary. So we had four candidates for the Republican nomination, and then one candidate filed as a Democrat. So there was no primary in the Democrat side. But on the Republican side, there was a primary. Christy Gillespie, who's the vice mayor of Broken Arrow, got about a little over 40% in that primary. Shelley Gortney, I think, it was around 27%, I want to say. So a situation where typically when there's that big of a gap, and the leader in the first round is that far ahead, it tends to go in the runoff to the leader. Sometimes there can be an upset, but that's why you have the election. In this case, Christy Gillespie won the runoff. So in November, she is up against the Democrat. I forget the name of the Democrat, but in that district, the Republican's very likely to come out on top, assuming mm-hmm. Republicans turn out to vote.
Yeah. Well, all right. She wasn't my choice. I'll just put it that way.
All right.
So there you have it. And I just wanted to get that figured out, because I know that they had the runoff, and I went and voted for the runoff even, but it didn't come out exactly the way I would have liked it to come out. Now, the mayoral race here in Tulsa is mm-hmm. rather interesting. What's his name?
Brent Van Norman.
Van Norman.
And
he was the third place finisher according to the votes.
Right.
And so there was a recall. He wanted a recount, okay, because the votes were fairly close
right.
between Karen Keith and what's the other
guy? So Monroe Nichols finished first, and then Karen yeah. Keith second. And there was only about 400 votes separating second and third place. Tulsa's a nonpartisan system now. As of when was that? 2016, I think, is when we moved to that before the Bartlett versus Bynum election of 2016. And what that's changed is, although, of course, these people are registered to vote as Republicans or Democrats, and you can look that up as a public record, on the ballot, there are no party markings.
Right.
So a lot of people are surprised. How does this city in the reddest state in the nation end up with a runoff for mayor between two Democrats?
Right.
And part of that is because simply you go to the polls, you look at the ballot, you see seven names listed, and you don't have any idea which is the Republican, which is the Democrat.
Nor do you have much of an idea of who to vote for and why.
Right.
You know, I mean, seriously.
You have, you know, we don't have, unfortunately, we're grateful to have Tulsa Beacon Weekend on once a week, but we don't have a daily local talk show anymore the way we did before Pat Campbell passed away.
Right.
So the way of getting the message out to the voters, it's just a lot more limited than it was. Brent Van Norman got into the race late. City councilor named Jamie Fowler from District 9. He was running for mayor, ran for about a year, just wasn't getting any traction. He didn't have perhaps the charisma or excitement that he needed. And he went back to running for city council for reelection. Brent Van Norman, who had been running for council over in West Tulsa, Southwest Tulsa, decided to run for mayor. He's only been in Tulsa for 3 years. He came here because his kids were here. Thought it would be a great city for his retirement years, and decided to get involved. And he ran a great race for only being in the race for about 3 months.
Hmm.
And if he'd had a couple more weeks, he would have. He was definitely on the climb. The more people got to know him, the more people liked him. But he had the added burden not only of letting people know, "Hey, I'm you want to vote for me." But just to say, yeah, I'm the conservative Republican who's got a chance of getting to the runoff if you will turn out and vote.
Right.
And he had to communicate that, motivate people to vote, and he fell about 400 votes short of where he needed to be. Karen Keith had been the prohibitive front runner. Nobody thought she could be challenged. She was up. Some people thought she'd win without a runoff.
Right, right.
And yet she fell to second place to a Democrat state representative from North Tulsa, Monroe Nichols.
Yeah, and you know, but here's the thing. So when you said there's like seven names on the ballot, there's no party affiliation listed, nobody knows exactly why or why I shouldn't vote for one or the other candidate. You know, it's not very clear. They had some local debates and so forth and that sort of stuff, but not everybody watches that, you know. So we've got a lot of uninformed voters going to the polls, voting for people who are either the same skin color or they saw them on television for years. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I mean. It boils down to uneducated voters who are making decisions like this. Bottom line, period.
It's driven by things like the mail you get. You get these slick mailers and you maybe look at them for 5 seconds between the mailbox and the trash can. And that makes whatever impression it's going to make. Sometimes there's dark money that's funding some of these mailers. We saw that 2 years ago in some of the state elections, like the race for attorney general, the race for governor, heavy dark money spending. You get a mailer from some PAC that you've never heard of, and you can't even find out who leads it or where
it's
located.
And you think it comes from the candidate.
And it looks like it comes from the candidate. That's right. So it's all very confusing. And some of the alternative media channels that people had to get some of that confusion cleared up are just not as vibrant as they once were, unfortunately.
Well, you're right. I mean, we don't have a full talk radio station here in Tulsa anymore. I mean, that just doesn't happen. There's nothing,
right.
There's nothing here like that anymore as there was. And I think off the air I said Pat Campbell. I meant Pat Richardson.
Oh, right. Yeah. Richardson.
Sorry. I didn't mean Campbell. Although I loved Pat Campbell. Don't get me wrong. And he had me on his show. But Pat Richardson was the guy I was thinking of back in the 90s.
KTRT,
KTRT, yeah. I used to call him my warm-up act because he was on from noon to 2, and then I was on from 2 to 6. He didn't like that when I called him my warm-up act.
So I remember him from KTOW back in the, I think, early 80s with Hal O'Halloran.
Oh, yeah. He Pat Richardson was a certainly an icon in Tulsa radio for many, many years, and he had the voice. Oh, my. All right, let's talk about... So now it's going to boil down to Monroe Nichols and Karen Keith.
Right.
And Tulsa's going to have a liberal Democrat as a mayor, regardless, after November.
Unfortunately, that's the way it is. Now, interestingly, Karen Keith's campaign consultants are the same firm that has represented quite a large number of what I'd call rhino Republicans in the state legislature. And this is the firm that was founded by Fount Holland called CAMP. Karen Keith has been denied access to Democrat voter records because she's using a principally Republican campaign firm for her consultants. So it's kind of an interesting thing. The Democratic Party said, we're not going to let them get their hands on our data.
that's
one more thing, one more obstacle for her. But there, I think there would be a chance if she's a little more moderate than Monroe Nichols is. At least she has that perception. She served on the county commission for 16 years. She's been, you know, just generally kind of a pro-tax, pro-chamber of commerce kind of person, not particularly ideological, at least in terms of her actions as an official, but in terms of who she supports, who she's endorsed, she's definitely a Democrat and definitely a liberal. Mm-hmm. But she might be able to make some concessions and give some assurances to people on the right that would bring conservatives into her column. The risk right now for her is that people will simply say, I mean, what's the difference? What's the benefit either way? They'll leave that line blank as they go to the polls to vote for Donald Trump and for Kevin Hearn and other Republicans. They'll say, well, I don't have any preference one way or the other in the mayor's race. And it's up to her to give conservatives a reason to think that she'd be better than, even if not ideal, but better than Monroe Nichols.
Mm-hmm.
One of the issues that there could be a difference on, although right now they seem to be in lockstep, Monroe Nichols has gone full force with the idea of co-governance. He even uses that term. The idea that the tribal governments should have an equal say to the city officials that we elect, that we all elect, including people who are tribal members and people who aren't, that there should be an equal say to these tribal governments as to how our city is run. That's something that you've seen in places like Australia and New Zealand, this move toward indigenous co-governance. And what it really boils down to is, here's a way to get around democracy. So if the people want the freedom to build and to grow and to develop their economy, but the indigenous governments say, no, we don't like that, they get a veto. That's what Monroe Nichols wants to give to these governments that are elected by maybe 5 to 10,000 people, most of whom don't even live in the city of Tulsa. And yet he's willing to turn over our sovereignty as Oklahomans and as Tulsans to these tribal officials. Now, if Karen Keith hasn't gone quite that fully in that direction,
mm-hmm.
and if she could assure us, for example, that she'll defend the city of Tulsa's power to enforce its speeding laws, its zoning laws, to be the government for all the people in the city of Tulsa as these cases work their way through federal court, that would go a long way to assuring people that she'd be a better choice.
Mm.
But I haven't seen any moves to that effect yet. And so we've got, early voting will be starting. People will be turning in their absentee ballots. And then we'll have our early voting days. And November is not that far away from us. If she's going to make a move, it'll have to be soon.
So I think, to answer that question of, will they leave it blank? I don't think so. I think people will just do what I just said. They'll either go with this guy because they've heard of him, or they like the way he looks, or he's from the north side.
Or they
whatever.
Like James Monroe.
Yeah. Or it's at the name. I don't know. The name rings a bell. Or they're going to go with Karen Keith because they saw her on television for years and she was a county commissioner. And so she has some name recognition. And I think that's really the way it's going to go, one way or the other. I don't know who will come out ahead, but I think that that's the way people are going to make that decision, because those are their only two choices now on the ballot in come November. All right. So I mentioned Nathan Dahm has been term limited out. What about Dave Rader? I haven't been in touch with Dave for a while. He's been on this show, but it's been a long time. I can't remember. Is he still in or out, or what do you know off the top of your head, or am I
off
putting
the
you on
top,
the spot?
I'm sorry.
No, I
was in
spot.
His district. I'm no longer in his district. The lines were redrawn after the 2020 census. I think he still has one more term, and okay. I believe he has a Democrat opponent, but I don't recall off the top of my head. He did not draw any. There was no primary in that district.
Okay. So I will, I'll have to reach out to Dave Rader and get him on the show again and talk about things of the state legislature with him now that Nathan is gone.
There is, in district 35, which was Gary Stanislavski's district before that.
I know Gary.
It was, Don Rubottom was in that district and served, I believe 8 or 12 years. And so it's been a traditionally Republican district, but in, when was it? It would have been 4 years ago. There was a very contentious Republican primary between Cheryl Baber and Kaiden Creekpalm. Cheryl won the nomination in a runoff, but was defeated by a Democrat, partly because some Rhino Midtown Republicans supported the Democrat, Joanna Dossett. So, there is a contest. A fellow named Dean Martin is running to try to recapture that seat for the Republicans. Hmm. So we'll see if that comes about.
Oh, well. With a martini in his hand?
Singing Everybody Loves Somebody.
Sometimes. All right. So Dean Martin is running. That's good to hear. What about the city council races? Did any of those shake down the way you thought they would, or were you surprised by any of the city council races?
I wasn't surprised. There again, we have this problem of a nonpartisan ballot so that people don't necessarily have a hook to remember who they might want to vote for. And in many cases, we didn't even have that many counts that many candidates run. We had an open seat in District 3. Krista Patrick decided not to run for re-election, but only two candidates filed for office, a Democrat and a Republican. And the Democrat
won. One of the districts, though, had like seven, didn't they?
District 2 had a pretty big number, and District, District 9.
Yeah.
Now, District 9 was going to be an open seat because Jamie Fowler was going to run for mayor, but
He backed out.
So mm-hmm. Now there's a runoff. Jamie Fowler actually finished second. Carol Bush, who was a state representative for many years and very much a Rhino, very much progressive, but with a Republican label, she actually finished first in the primary. So those two will be on the November ballot in a runoff. And then there's a runoff in District 2. Stephanie Reisdorf. Anthony Archie, both registered Republicans. Anthony Archie finished first in that race. He's a former youth minister. He was at Kirk Crossing, been involved in various nonprofits.
He's a drummer in the ORU pep band in which I play, and I play with Anthony Archie. And
okay.
Yeah, I'm all over that. I'm hoping he wins.
All right.
For sure.
So there's that race, and then the other race on the November ballot, we have District 7, which is Southeast Tulsa, and Lori Dechter Wright, who's, I believe she's with Tulsa Opera now. She was an opera singer 20-some years ago out in the San Francisco Bay Area and then moved to Tulsa. She's the incumbent. She's a Democrat. She's very much a liberal, way out on the left end. Her opponent is Eddie Huff, who's a conservative. He's got a Fresh Black Coffee podcast. He used to be on the radio with Pat Campbell.
Pat Campbell, yeah.
At KFAQ long ago. And so he's a great candidate. And I'd say of all the key races, that would be the one if you wanted, looking for a place to volunteer to help get a conservative on the Tulsa City Council where otherwise it's not likely to happen. I would invest in Eddie Huff's campaign in District 7.
Yeah. Yeah, I would say Anthony Archie and Eddie Huff would make two great new city councilors.
Right.
Because sometimes we need new blood out there.
Absolutely. Definitely now, because typically what we've had for several years now is mostly a council full of rubber stamps.
Right.
And the handful of people like Grant Miller who would stick their heads above the parapet and try to make a difference, call out some bad behavior, call out violations of the Open Meetings Act or bad tax packages. He basically had his life and his professional career destroyed in revenge for just being willing to stand up and stand up for what's right.
Yeah. We're talking with Michael Bates from Batesline.com. That is his website, blog, you name it. Check it out. A lot of information there, a lot of good information there. And it's, you update it often. How often is there new stuff on there?
It tends to be about once a week. I make a special effort to get material out in advance of the election. I know a lot of people, they'd like to know, well, what is the state question really all about?
Right.
So I will do a deep dive, actually look at the language, not just what's on the ballot, but what was in the petition or resolution that was passed, what's going to go into the state constitution or into the statute books if that proposition is approved. And we'll dig into that, dig into some of the races that people don't typically pay a lot of attention to or there's not a lot of media about. So I know people are hearing a lot about the presidential election. They'll hear a lot about congressional elections. We don't have a Senate race this year. But it's the local races, it's the legislative races that's the gap that I try to fill on Batesline.com.
All right, we're going to talk more about that here in just a minute. Let me mention the Tulsa Beacon newspaper, folks, because I want you to be able to get out there and get your copy of the Tulsa Beacon newspaper. It's available in print, and you can purchase it at Midtown Hardware at 31st Street, east of Harvard. It's between Harvard and Yale. It says True Value Midtown Hardware. And again, stop by there, tell DJ you heard about him here on the radio. He'll give you a 10% off discount card. I know Michael said that's close to where you live.
That is, and it's my first stop. Anytime I'm looking for something to fix something around the house, I stop at Midtown Hardware. More often than not, they've got it. And the great thing is you park at the door, you walk in, it's all that you don't have to cross a vast parking lot and get lost in 100,000 square feet. And the people behind the counter actually know something about fixing things around the house. So if you've got a question, you can ask them. They're terrific people. Right. And it's great. It's a great resource to have in Midtown.
Okay. Well, there's a commercial for Midtown Hardware. Minute Stop in Broken Arrow. That's at 131st in Aspen. You can also get the newspaper at Wild Birds Unlimited at 61st in Yale. Or simply call Susan over at the Tulsa Beacon office, 918-523-4425, 918-523-4425. And subscribe by phone. I can't guarantee Susan's going to be the one that answers the phone. There's other people in the office, but somebody will answer. And if not, well, leave a message. They'll get back to you. All right, we're talking with Michael Bates from Batesline.com. Next week on the program, we're going to be chatting with Phil Sklar. He is the CEO and co-founder of the National Bobblehead Hall of Fame. And he's coming on for two reasons. Number one, I'm a big bobblehead fan, got a big collection. But number two, the University of Tulsa has a new mascot bobblehead doll that'll be coming out. They've debuted it, or they unveiled it recently, but it's not going to be available for shipping for a couple of months. So, but I believe the new mascot name at TU is Gusty. If I'm wrong, I'm sorry, but I think it's Gusty. Anyway, a new bobblehead for the TU mascot. We'll talk about that. Also, maybe one of our senators will be on next week. I'm still waiting to get a definitive word on that, but it looks like there's a possibility we'll have somebody on from the U.S. Senate. All right. Michael, this is top of the page on your website right now, this story, which I think is funny because this is something I have questioned 35 years, 36 years that I've lived in Tulsa, is the way the city meanders and how there's different voting locations that are outside Tulsa, the city limits or the county limits or whatever. It's so stinking confusing. And you talk about in here, it says here, a friend who lives in Turley was ready to go vote in the mayoral election only to find out that his precinct was closed. Okay. Turley is not within the Tulsa city limits. They can't vote for the city council. He pays all his taxes to Tulsa County, Tulsa city stuff, blah, blah, blah. Then you got somebody else who asked you if they could run for city council district 1 when both are registered to vote oh, how can the people who ran in District 1 when they're registered to vote in Osage County, but they're running for this Tulsa city? And I honestly assumed the whole entire city of Tulsa was within Tulsa County. I guess I'm wrong. I know Broken Arrow is split between Tulsa County and Wagner County.
Right.
But what about Tulsa? So this article really hit home with me because I'm like, this is so goofy.
Yeah. Yeah. I did a deep dive. There are screenshots from an interactive map that shows the odd boundaries that have accumulated over the years. Tulsa right now goes into four different counties, mainly in Tulsa County, of course. But
you're talking about the city of Tulsa.
The city of Tulsa, right. So the city of the
overlaps
the
four
municipality
counties
that elects a mayor and a city council and has a police department and a fire department. So we have we expanded in the 1950s into Osage County. We annexed. There's a little area, you know, downtown Tulsa's
that
very
little bit
close.
Of northwest Tulsa.
Right, yeah. Right. So, and then in the early 70s, about 50 years ago, we added Gilcrease Hills,
right.
the new neighborhood.
And
that
that's
was developed.
In Osage.
That's in Osage County. And that's where the two candidates for District 1 lived.
Okay.
In the Gilcrease Hills development. When we built the Port of Catoosa as a joint venture with Rogers County, we wanted to make sure that was protected against getting annexed by Catoosa or Claremore, and so we put a fence line. We annexed just 70 feet wide strip of land that surrounds it, but we didn't actually annex the port itself, and that's something that a lot of cities have done to protect the land for future expansion without having to provide services in the near term.
Mm. Okay, and so. That's the confusion there. And so you're telling me Turley is not in the city limits?
Turley has never been in the city limits of Tulsa. It was a little village that, for whatever reason, never incorporated. And eventually Tulsa got right up to it and built a fence line around it. So it can never be part of some other city. But Tulsa could annex it at some point in the future, but they have not.
So it's just not been official.
Right. It's not official. They don't get our police protection. They rely on the sheriff's department. They've got a volunteer fire department and they buy water from the city, but they're not in the city of Tulsa.
What about New Tulsa out east? Is that in Wagner County or Rogers?
That's in Wagner County and okay. New Tulsa was a separate municipality. It's now part of Broken Arrow. It got annexed into Broken Arrow. I don't know, within the last 20 years.
Yeah, so now New Tulsa is actually North Broken Arrow.
Correct.
Basically.
Yes.
Wagner County.
In Wagner County.
Yeah.
And there's some Tulsa in Wagner County now as of about 23 years ago, 2001.
So confusing, folks. But here's the deal. I guess you got to look at your voter ID card, look at your precinct number, and go by that. Is that it?
Well, it'll tell you on the voter ID card, and if you go to the voter tool online at the state election board, it'll tell you which school district you're in, which city, if any, that you're in, and which ward within those districts, within the school district, within the city that you're in.
Yeah, don't get me started on the school district thing. That's
all right.
That's a total mess up.
In some states, all those lines coincide.
Yeah.
And I give some examples
in
the article.
Where I'm from in New York, I mean, we have some rural school districts, and that's a little different. But within the cities, that's it.
Right.
But here you got Jenks School District that overlaps Jenks and Tulsa. You got Union, Tulsa, Broken Arrow. I mean, it's just goofy. All right. We are out of time. Michael, you're going to have to come back because we got to talk about the national election.
Love to do it.
All right. Michael Bates joining us. Go to Batesline.com, Batesline.com on the internet. Jeff Brookleary saying so long. Sorry to wrap it up quickly here. We'll be back next week with Tulsa Beacon Weekend.
Thank you for listening to Tulsa Beacon Weekend on AM 970 KCFO with your host, Jeff Brookleary. Join us for Tulsa Beacon Weekend every Saturday at noon on AM 970 KCFO. Talk you can trust. AM 970 KCFO, Tulsa.
With SRN News, I'm Bob Agnew in Washington. An Israeli airstrike on a Beirut suburb on Friday claimed the life of Ibrahim Akil, a Hezbollah commander who's played a major role in the terrorist assault against Israeli civilians. He had been in charge of the group's elite Radwan forces. That same strike killed about a dozen members of the terrorist group who were meeting in the basement of that same building when it was destroyed. Former Senator Jim Talent predicts a Donald Trump election victory in November would lead to European countries once again shouldering a greater portion of their own defense spending and easing the burden on American taxpayers. He says Donald Trump was unique in his ability to get European partners to shoulder more of their share of their own defense. The beginning of the high school football season has seen a string of deaths this year. The experts say players are most at risk in the late summer months of August and September. This is SRN News.
Hey, folks, Donald Trump Jr. here. Let me ask you this. Does inflation feel worse than we're being told in the news? That's because the official inflation rate doesn't tell the whole story. Since January of 2021, the cost of living has increased by 17.9%. You can't get that money back. But what you can do is stop your losses today. How? By diversifying your savings into a gold IRA from my friends at the Birch Gold Group. When you're done, your money will be parked in a tangible asset with proven history. To see how it works, get your free info kit on gold IRAs by texting the word PREPARE to 989898. Birch Gold is the only gold company I trust. They provide an easy process to roll over your 401k or IRA into gold without losing your tax advantage status. So text PREPARE to 989898. That's PREPARE to the number 989898 to get your